From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. If you've followed politics over the past couple of years, odds are you've heard rhetoric of this sort.
Transgender for everybody, men playing in women's sports, all of the different things we talk about, it's insane.
So-called gender-affirming care has inflicted lasting physical and psychological damage on vulnerable young people.
The concern that that's been expressed to me has come from female constituents. They should have the privacy to use the bathroom of their gender without people of another gender in that bathroom space.
President Donald Trump, Health and Human Services Secretary RFK Jr. on an attempt to ban gender-affirming care for trans youth, and a Republican Kansas state representative on a proposed bathroom law in that state. Depending on whom you ask, transgender people make up maybe 0.5% of the American population, maybe up to 1.5%. And yet quite a bit of our political conversation is spent talking about whether trans people should be able to play in sports of the gender they identify with. States have passed laws trying to criminalize the ability of trans people to use the bathroom in public. And even where gender-affirming care remains legal, in many cases it's gotten a lot harder to access, especially for young people. For all of this, transgender adults have limited representation in city halls, state capitals, and especially in Congress, where just last year, Representative Sarah McBride of Delaware became the first trans official that we know of to serve there. And so we are going to talk today with some of the trans people who are running for office in this political climate. Bethany Johnson is one of more than a dozen people seeking the Democratic primary nomination in Illinois' 9th Congressional District. This is to replace Jan Schakowsky, who's retiring after more than a quarter century in the House. Bethany grew up in rural Missouri, moved to Chicago in the early 2000s. Bethany Johnson, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thank you so much.
Also with us is Zoe Carter, based in Pekin, Illinois. Now, Zoe filed to run as a Democrat in the 93rd Illinois House District, which goes from Pekin north up to the Rock River near the Quad Cities. It's currently held by a Republican, Travis Weaver. Carter was removed from the primary ballot after a challenge to her petition signatures. Nevertheless, she's still campaigning, keeping her options open for the general election in November. Zoe Carter, welcome to you as well.
Thank you for having me.
And a bit later in the hour, we'll also hear from two women who are running in other parts of the Midwest with considerably different political climates than Illinois. For now, you can join us today at 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. All right, Bethany, let's just start with a general question. What made you want to run for office this year?
Honestly, I'm more of a political activist. I was protesting one of the other candidates, and she filed a court order against me, and we fought her in court. And along that path, I decided that I just couldn't stand to not be a part of this conversation, as I saw so many people vying for this office as some kind of feather for their cap instead of the place of service that it is.
What would you say are the issues that are most important to you in American politics?
I mean, I think that just like most progressive Democrats, there are a lot of things that I feel very strongly about right now, the overreach of ICE and the attack on not just queer rights, but things like women's rights across the country. But my main pressure here in this district right now is to push for a constituent office that serves this district. I think a lot of the times our representatives are facing MSNBC a lot more than they're facing their own constituents, and it is very frustrating to me.
Zoe Carter, same question to you. What motivated you to run for office this year?
Yeah, so I actually don't have a political background. I had started running for office back in 2023. I was a retail grocery store assistant manager, and I've been in retail since I was like 15 years old. And the story goes, while I was at work, because I'm the type of person that if I tell one of my employees to do something, I better do it. And this lady walked in, and she had called me over. I was up bagging groceries, and she came over. I was like, I need to return this food. And she had milk, bread, and formula. She also had her about 3 year old and about 4 to 6 month old with her. And she was just trying to buy basic necessities. And so I ended up paying for it for her. I was like, here, I got it for you. And then as she was walking out, I kind of like stared at her and then looked back at the register, looked at her, looked at the register. I was like, this is something's wrong here, you know? And I ended up going home, thought about it more and more, and it's like, someone needs to do something about this, you know? And we hear about, progressives and trans people and all that in, our big cities or blue cities, but we don't hear anything from us in rural areas. And so, like, I still live in my hometown. I'm an eighth generation Pekinite. And I was like, you know what? Let's go. And so I dug down and I studied everything. And here we are.
All right, so Bethany, how would you characterize the current state of affairs for trans people across the country right now?
I think we're in a very precarious situation across the country. I would say that currently we are facing more challenges as a group than we did when I was a kid. We just lost access to accurate passports in the last year, that's huge. People don't understand that that has been fine. To have an accurate passport for a trans person since the early 90s. I played roller derby as an open trans woman in the early 2000s, and nobody cared. And now it seems to be a hot topic issue to people that I was, that's never been a problem before. So the kind of regressive action that we're seeing nationally is very dangerous. And when we have a national party that shrugs its shoulders regarding trans rights, when we have someone, when we have our representatives in Congress not actively fighting for us, but instead kind of trying to meet conservatives in the middle on my life and the lives of other trans people, it's a very dangerous time.
Zoe, how do you assess that situation for trans people closer to home, in Illinois specifically?
Yeah, so I do agree with Bethany. I mean, right now there's. Life is hard for a lot of trans folks. Like I said, even though I live in Illinois and Illinois is a very progressive state for trans people, I'm grateful for our governor and I'm grateful for our state party. Even in Illinois, it varies whether you can get access different places. So up in Chicago is different than down here. There's less doctors, there's less ways for people to get medication, there's less ways for people to go to therapy and things like that. It's the access and everything else is a lot harder in these rural areas where in big cities people may not necessarily think about that. When you have to drive 40 minutes just to go to a doctor's appointment, and that doctor is in a small town of like 1,000 people, it's hard. It's very, very hard.
All right, we have a couple of other voices we want to bring into the conversation. But before that, Zoe, just like as a point of order, I mentioned that you were knocked off the ballot. There was a challenge to your petitions, but you're still running a campaign. What are your options? I know Illinois law has like these particularities about if you filed as a Democrat, you can't run as an independent in the general election. I guess you could do a write-in campaign, with, filing separately in all the different counties and election authorities. What is the situation with your campaign? What is your plan moving forward?
So I can't get too far into it, but I can definitely say my name will be on the general ballot.
Okay, well, time will tell with that one. All right, let me reintroduce our conversation. If you're just joining us today, this is the 21st show, and we are talking with some of the trans people, trans women in particular, today who are running for office at a time when the ability of trans people to do anything from playing sports, going to the bathroom, getting medical care has become a hot political topic. We're talking about this with Zoe Carter, who has been running to represent the 93rd district in the Illinois House. who, despite, as we just heard, was disqualified from the primary ballot. Bethany Johnson is running in the very crowded Democratic primary for the 9th U.S. House District in Illinois. That would be to serve in Congress. They're going to stay with us. I want to bring two more voices into the conversation now, though, running in states where the local political environment is quite different. In Indiana, Republicans hold the governorship, have supermajorities in the state House and Senate. Just yesterday, the state's Bureau of Motor Vehicles banned residents from changing gender markers on state identification. And it's there that Liliana Young is running in a Democratic primary to serve as a state representative against an incumbent who has been unchallenged for their role in elections, every election since 2012. Young is running to represent Bloomington, Indiana, home to Indiana University. Liliana Young, welcome to the 21st show.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
And in Michigan, a Democrat is governor, and Democrats do narrowly control the state Senate, but they're outnumbered in the House. Joanna Whaley is one of four trans women running in Michigan this year. Whaley is campaigning in the Democratic primary for a state House district in the Detroit metropolitan area. Her opponent was one of eight Democrats to vote in favor of a resolution calling on the state's high school athletic association to ban trans girls from girls' sports. Joanna, welcome to you as well.
Thanks for having me.
And listeners, again, you can join us 800-222-9455. So, Liliana Young, you're in Indiana. We talked about the national landscape. We talked about Illinois. What are you seeing in Indiana in particular?
It's a mess here. I could probably take up the entirety of the show going over all the problems plaguing the state. As far as trans issues go, I think this state is very rapidly catching up to Florida and Texas, which had previously held the crowns as being the worst states in the union. As you've mentioned, the BMV just canceled the ability for people to change gender markers. We're about to have legislation that will also codify that with birth certificates as well. It's fully illegal for trans women, only trans women, to engage in women's sports on any level. There's numerous other pieces of legislation that are going to make things really dire for us here.
It's interesting. You mentioned trans women in sports. It doesn't apply to trans men playing sports, I gather, then, from what you said?
Not the last time I could be. I'm willing to be wrong. But the last time I had looked at the legislation, it was specifically targeting trans women.
Joanna Whaley, same question to you, specifically when it comes to issues, you know, affecting people who are trans. How does Michigan compare to what we've been talking about?
Yeah, well, you know, this issue, you put it in the lead up and to introduce my race. You know, we have a party in power in the state house that is more focused on trans people than fixing the problems in our state. You know, and they like to invoke their faith in the process. And what we're seeing across the state is dehumanizing law. Coming up over and over that they know it's going to go nowhere with a Democratic Senate and a Democratic governor. They're just doing this to exercise their cruelty. And it really is a waste of the taxpayers' time. People in my district are asking for help with their water bills, with their utility bills. And here we are arguing, can girls play in a sport? And my Democratic House member voted to keep them out of sports, and it's something that we're just struggling with. And we live on the border here with Canada. I have conversations day in and day out with trans people across the state who are nervous and who are worried. Can I get across the border if things get hard? How do I get across the border? Do I go across legally or illegally? People have to ask those questions. If I do, what happens to my kids and my family? You know, these are the real questions that people are facing. But it's a waste of time because people need serious help with the things that everyday people, LGBTQ people make up 6% of the population in the state of Michigan. And it is the tiniest bit of problem. We have no problems with our identity. We want solutions. And so that's what we're facing here in the state, is just the GOP wasting everyone's time by using faith and trying to use their faith to legislate humanity out of our state.
All right, let me remind listeners, you can join us today at 800-222-9455. How do you feel about the way issues relating to people who are transgender are talked about in modern American politics? Are there changes you would make, either at the state or federal level? Or maybe you have a question for one of our guests today. 800-222-9455. We need to take a break. I am going to read a text message we got from a listener as we're going to the break. We can answer it when we get back. This is from Randy in rural Peoria County, who says he has a trans person in his family. He's willing to stand with them and others who have had to face that journey, as he puts it. He goes on, "My only question to these brave ones is about the current general move of policy to force a postponement of the whole process until a set date that is near the end of development." And I'm just going to break in here to say, I think what Randy is talking about is delaying gender care until the end of adolescence. He asks, "Is that a good or bad thing?" And he concludes, "May the population you address find a safe way to get where the forces inside are driving them." We're going to take on that question when we come back. Again, if you want to join us, 800-222-9455 is the number. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking today about, or with, I should say, some of the trans women who are running for office in America, in the Midwest, at a time when the ability of trans people to play sports, go to the bathroom, or just even get medical care has become a contentious political topic. My guests for this part of the program today are Zoe Carter, running to represent the 93rd Illinois House District, Bethany Johnson, who is running in the primary for the 9th U.S. House District in Illinois to represent us in Congress. Liliana Young is running in a state representative primary in Indiana, and Joanna Whaley is running in Michigan this year for a state house district in the Detroit metropolitan area. 800-222-9455 if you want to join us today. 800-222-9455. Bethany, can I ask you that question that Randy wrote in with before the break about the age of gender-affirming care for people? I don't know how much you want to talk about your own personal story here, but what do you think about this move to delay that care until later in adolescence or even post-adolescence?
Oh, when I was a young trans kid, Frankfurters cost a nickel. When I first started transitioning, I ordered my hormones online, you know, and they got sent directly to my house and I would take them. I got ordered them from overseas pharmacies. You know, when I first went to a clinic when I was 24, they were like, "Wow, you've been just doing your own prescribing." You know, I'm like, "Yeah, there used to be a much larger black market in this country, and we realized that people needed to seek medical care, and that's better to have an informed consent model for older for adults." But youth aren't treated on an informed care model. I want to be clear about that. Trans youth have to jump through so many hoops and see so many doctors before they are prescribed anything. And what they're prescribed is puberty blockers. Transitioning for those kids who are generally severely gender dysphoric is the reason why they're approved, is because, the regret rate for those kids, for those people is like lower than the regret rate for tattoos or getting your ears pierced. I think I've seen the data. It's incredibly low. We look towards some unicorn statistical person to say, "Oh, this one person had regret," when we are forgetting that there's a whole bunch of kids who are probably safe from suicide. You know, I grew up wanting to kill myself. I came to Chicago fleeing from Missouri so that I wouldn't have to kill myself. You know, we built a more accepting world where people realize that for a lot of people, this is a severe medical issue. And that's when we started treating people humanely. So if we wait too long, we might lose those kids.
We got another text message. This one is from Helen in Springfield, who says, I'd like to ask your guests their personal preferences with regard to the manner in which they are introduced as candidates and the ways in which they are discussed by the public. If I were in their places, I would prefer to have my ideas and my political opinions discussed rather than the fact that my physical body has undergone a transformation. Helen goes on, perhaps for them it's unavoidable to be labeled as a representative as trans. It seems very difficult to me. I stand in awe of their courage and determination. Let me ask Liliana, how do you strike that balance? Talking about, you know, all the issues voters care about, you know, economy, healthcare, immigration, etc., with, you know, focusing on the things that just affect trans people.
Yeah, in most of my campaign material and in rhetoric, I put forward the fact that I'm a democratic socialist and I am a lifelong service industry worker first. But I do not mind at all being labeled as the trans candidate because I am trans. And it's a very significant part of what makes me who and what I am. And from my perspective, I come from a legacy inherited from titans like Marsha Johnson and Sylvia Rivera. And I'm deeply proud of that. And I don't shy away at all from being referred to as the trans candidate. It doesn't bother me.
Zoe, sort of a related question. If you're out campaigning, there's a very real chance you will run into someone who, you know, might strongly disagree with you on policy. How do you handle it when you interact with someone who thinks, you know, trans people shouldn't be able to play sports or, you know, use the bathroom of their choice? How do you handle that?
Yeah, so, you know, I kind of building off of Liliana's answer there and including your question in there as well, you know, myself running for state representative, I'm running as I'm the very first trans person in the history of Illinois to even run for this position. And so being trans is up the forefront for a lot of different people. I go into everything and I'm like, you know, hey, you can talk about my body, you can talk about all, you know, my physical appearance, but why I'm running for office is not because I'm trans. I'm not running for office to have trans representation. That's not my main goal. My main goal is, why are these small towns dying? Why are utility bills so high? Why are grocery stores so grocery prices so high? You know, those kitchen table issues that people need. And so when people start to bring up that, hey, you know, what about trans women in sports? Well, first off, how many trans women are in sports in Illinois? The number is incredibly low. I'll be honest, I don't know the exact number, but it's less than 20. I think it's less than 10. So, you know,
yeah, it varies from year to year. I actually happen to have these stats if I can get the right window up in front of me here. I mean, it was something like 11 one year, you know, 15 one year, 7 one year. It did go up a little bit in the early part of this decade, but yeah, it's a fraction of a fraction of a percent. Please continue.
Exactly.
Sorry to interrupt. Yeah.
Exactly. Yep. So, I mean, you know, those issues are so small. And what's happening right now is I tell people all the time, it is easier to lead with hate than it is to lead with love. And, you know, so when they want people to vote for the other side, they're going the easy route. They're just trying to get people to be like, this is a boogeyman, when in reality it's not. We need to be focusing on the kitchen table issues, making sure people can afford to live here in Illinois, and making sure that people can, you know, raise families, have good jobs, have good houses, and things like that.
Bethany, I saw you raising your hand on this point as well.
You might have to bleep me,
Well, please, please don't do that.
Can you say, you know, I tell those people to eat me. you know, I'm not here to get pushed around. And if I show up somewhere and we have a disagreement on taxes or, you know, what the role of the military, we can disagree on that. If you have a disagreement about whether I should be able to go to the bathroom, then eat me, buddy. I got in a fight with a Trumper in front of the Brown Elephant in Clark, on Clark Street in Chicago, you know, and everybody ran out of there. You know, people were ready to back me up. You know, I live in a bright blue area and it's, you know, I'm not going to take any crap from these people. You know, I didn't used to have to take this crap. You know, when I transitioned, you know, a long time ago, nobody cared. And now I'm getting into my late 40s and people are starting to push me around. Hey, eat me, buddy. Joanne Johnson didn't raise a coward, you know? She didn't like that I was her daughter, but she sure didn't raise a coward. I think it's important, you know, that we stand up for ourselves and we tell people we're not going away. And if you want us to, too damn bad.
And Joanna, I saw you had your hand up as well.
Yeah, you know, a lot of this, and sometimes this questioning comes out of, are you ashamed? I came from the narrative of, so before I came out as a trans woman, I was an evangelical pastor. Transness was shameful in those environments. And transness is a kitchen table issue for many on the right. And so what we need to do is we need to show those and speak the language of evolution and invite people to evolve into a conversation to see, I care about what you care about. Yes, I'm trans, and that just happens to be something that's very interesting about me. But look, I'm also talking about the things, you know, that you care about. I know that my existence is a walking, talking holiday party nightmare. I'm trans. I'm a politician. Yes, I went to seminary. Like all of these things, right? They might be the kitchen table issue, but I want to show you that we are normal people that struggle with the same things you do. The bill comes in the mail, the same as it does for you, and we worry about it as well. And I think that, you know, we're not going to be ashamed of who we are. But we have to understand that much of the nation believes that transness is shameful. And we're here to show you that it's not. It's very natural and it's very normal. And so we're here to just declare we're just like the rest of you.
That is a really interesting comment you made there. Transness is a kitchen table issue on the right. I've never heard it put quite that way. And it does put me in mind because there's so much conversation this year about Sarah McBride, right, who is the first out trans woman to serve in Congress for, you know, some people think this is a good strategy, some people think it's bad, but she has created a template for trans people in public office in which she downplays that as much as she can, despite her opponents trying to elevate it. I wonder how you all feel about the example she has set, and maybe Bethany, I'll start with you.
Oh my gosh, I was looking for the thumbs down emoji for the Zoom chat we're in. I went to Washington last year partially to protest against her. I'm so sick of Sarah McBride. So sick. I haven't met another trans person who likes her. So if anyone here does, I apologize for saying this. I went to Washington immediately after the bathroom ban to talk to my representative, Jan Schakowsky, and she told me, Sarah says we're all gonna just ignore it. And I told her, listen, old lady, I came to Washington, D.C. to stand up for myself, and this lady won't stand up for any of us because Sarah McBride was born rich and she's a representative, so none of this really affects her because she can go back to her private bathroom. I went to every men's bathroom in the Capitol and their office building when I was in D.C., and I peed on their floors because if you want me to use the men's room, then I'm going to pee in a big puddle right in front of the urinals. And guess what? Nobody that was visiting the Capitol that day understood what was going on, but I sure did. Because you make yourself an obstruction to these people. Sarah McBride went back to her bathroom, her private office. That lady would pee in a coffee can to make conservatives happy. She voted for the Charlie Kirk Remembrance Day too. That lady can get bent and eat a bag of dog crap on the side of the highway.
Wow. Okay. Liliana Young, what do you think about Sarah McBride? in her approach to politics, I should say, the template she set.
Forgive me, I'm recovering from the laughter. I really do enjoy Beth's response here. Look, I have a lot of criticisms of Sarah McBride, and I've even put a lot of it on my social media. I am going to say I do think that Ms. McBride has begun some course correction in the last few months, at least that's what it seems. And if she stays on that, then great. I can back her if she continues with that. But I do feel like a lot of her approach has been almost acting like she's ashamed of being trans. And that doesn't really gel with me. I do wish that she'd be more overt in acknowledging publicly that she's trans and she's not going to be pushed around by Nancy Mace for that. And I feel like some of her politics are generally a little too centrist for my taste anyway. I have a lot of disagreements with her. I don't think she's a terrible person. I definitely think she could be better, though.
And Joanna, did I see you had your hand raised on this point as well?
Yeah, I'm willing to disagree with my panelists here, you know, especially here in the state of Michigan. You know, I think that Sarah McBride has broken a ceiling that needed to be broken. And, you know, and yeah, we're all going to walk through this political, work very differently. And I understand, you know, why she operates the way she does, but I mean, there's things I'm going to do different. If the state house in Michigan makes it illegal, like against the rules for me to go to the bathroom, I'm happy to get arrested every single day and have a record for that. You know what I'm saying? So like, I think that sometimes the first one through the wall is the bloodiest, and we have to be ready to, you know, learn from them and take and evolve from what we learn.
And Zoe, I don't think I've asked you to weigh in on this particular point yet.
No, yeah, and I think you should have seen that we all went in to kind of weigh in on this. I am actually going to have to agree with Joanna for the most part on this. So, like she said, you know, Sarah McBride broke a very large glass ceiling. And so when she went into office, you know, there was no trans person that had ever sat in that seat. So it was all brand new. And, you know, as someone who's running in a fairly rural district, and kind of how I had mentioned before, you know, you have to speak to the voters. You have to see, okay, what do they want? And so, you know, harping on trans issues 100% of the time isn't going to get you elected. It is not going to get you support. It's not what people want to hear. That being said, I do also agree that there could have been some things that she could have done differently. With the bathroom, I would have just used the bathroom that I relate to, you know, and I would have said something a little more, but I have also personally met Sarah McBride, and she is a wonderful human being, and she has her heart in the right place. She's just trying to figure it out like we all are.
Well, that is where we're going to have to leave this conversation. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to be with us and share your perspectives with us. Liliana Young is in Indiana running to primary, a longtime Democratic incumbent there. Joanna Whaley in Michigan, running for her state's legislature. Bethany Johnson is one of the many Democrats running in the primary in the 9th Congressional District. And Zoe Carter had filed to run as a Democrat, is still campaigning in the 93rd Illinois House District, which ranges from Peoria to the Quad Cities area. Thank you all so much for joining us today on the 21st show. We're going to pivot to talk about the grocery store, the community co-op grocery store in Caro, when we come back after a short break. Stay with us.